Blog Talk Radio.
923, I'll give you a corrected address, but you have a fire in a one story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control. Squad 5, squad 5. England to 273, 273. England Battalion, 1818 Battalion. With a 273, 273.
Good evening and welcome to the Chaplain's Corner. It is August the 30th, which is hard to believe. We're already over halfway through 2018. It's amazing to me that we got this far along. And if you're down here in Florida, it's still really, really hot. We are still really, really warm. And I think today the radio said it was the real feel was over 100 degrees. So those of you who are up north and hopefully enjoying the beginning of fall coming soon, you can pass some of that along to us. And in a few months, we'll be able to pass along that we actually have good weather and you're actually cold. So it goes back and forth. I know I tease my parents a lot, but we look forward to having you guys on here listen to us. And tonight we're going to be talking about a topic, basically interviewing a friend and making sure that get his story out to you and be able to talk to you about kind of how his experience has helped shape who he is from his military background and even what he's doing now helping firefighters and other first responders. And I just wanted to share real quickly before we get into that today I had the privilege of sitting in a class with the City of West Palm Beach Fire Rescue Department. We had an instructor from St. Petersburg College, Mary Von Hout, who spoke, and just I've heard her two or three times. She's a phenomenal speaker, really has a passion for suicide awareness, suicide prevention, and did a great job just training all of us on how to train others. And I want to remind you that whenever you get opportunities to take classes like that, it's really good for you to take advantage of them, learn from them, get out there and take classes. You may already have a lot of experience and some you don't. I even had one individual when I walked in and said, "What are you doing here? You teach this." I said, "Well, I'm always learning. There's always really, really good stuff. And none of us are an expert. None of us are professionals at this. Even those who are professionals, there's still so much to learn. There's still so much to think about. And there's so many more pieces of information and statistics and data. And there's so many new things we can learn. I jotted down almost a full page of notes of just things that I know I was reminded of today. And there was a classroom of probably, I'm guessing about 40, 50 people there today who were just learning about what it means to take care of our own, looking at the possibility of starting chaplain programs and peer support programs and getting their EAP programs online. And we at Palm Beach County are very privileged that we have a really good EAP system that has become a model for a lot of others. And our EAP director, Ellen, leads us and directs us in the way we're supposed to go. And so we're able to use her expertise and to teach lots of other people. So it's kind of reminded of that, the privilege we have today. But we were also reminded of how well we're doing down here in South Florida with the resources we have. And so what we wanted to pass along to you was that you need to be able to do that same thing in your area. And so take the classes you need to take, get the experience you need to get, and just keep learning whatever you can. And so it's my privilege to have people like my guest tonight who can give us a different perspective, who have a different life experience. So I'm going to bring him on right now and allow him to start to kind of introduce himself and tell us a little bit about who he is. So if I did this right, I've had some bad luck with the radio lately, but if I did it right, I believe you're there, Mr. Guest Caller.
I hope I am, Captain Hurd.
Yes, you are. I can hear you. I apparently am not the greatest at this. I'm not the greatest at this radio technology thing. So why don't you introduce yourself and let everybody know who you are, and we're just going to get to know you on the radio show tonight.
Sure thing. Well, first, thank you for having me on. And my name is Matt Eversman. I live here in West Palm Beach, Florida, having migrated south from that the 8 months of frozen weather up in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm a retired infantry company first sergeant. I spent 20 years on active duty and wound up down here in South Florida because of the weather and closeness, proximity to the water, looking for a nice, easy glide into the fourth quarter, so to speak. And gosh, it's just been a great, great adventure for me, and I'm blessed to be here with you and to chat a little bit about, you know, my life in the military and where that's brought me in the last 10 years since I retired.
Great. And I know we've met a couple times at headquarters there when you come and spoken to our recruits and some other groups and talked about TECC class and some of your experience there. And so we'll get into that a little bit here, kind of what you've already done for us and some of the things you do even around the country. But just tell everybody just a little bit about your story in the military and kind of how, obviously you did the right thing in coming down here. You're retiring where everybody else retires. Although all the firefighters I work with, we all seem to be planning to retire north in like North Carolina somewhere. So we seem to be doing it backwards, but you apparently did it right and ended up down here. But tell us about kind of your military experience and what transpired there. And then as just a little bit about yourself there.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I don't want to drive every one of your listeners away to, you know, watch whatever's on public television tonight, because it could be more exciting than listening to me.
I'll tell you what. How about we emphasize it briefly? We can do that then. How's that?
Yeah, cool. So here's the story. Like a lot of other young men, 20-somethings, I was struggling in college and decided that I needed to have an adventure. And I mean that in the sincerity of the words, late 1987, 88, or like 87, the height of the Cold War. And it seemed like a great time to join the military to have an adventure. And, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a fireman, but, you know, for young men, certainly post 9/11, young women too, that have this calling to serve and, you know, that's an easy mission to get behind. And so I enlisted in the Army and became an infantryman, wound up being an airborne ranger, and eventually found myself at Fort Benning, Georgia, in the 3rd Ranger Battalion of the 75th Ranger Regiment. And during that enlistment, I was part of a task force of special operators that were sent to Mogadishu, Somalia, in early night. Actually, believe it or not, it was 25 years ago this past Monday, 27 August 1993, I deployed to Mogadishu to Somalia as part of a task force to capture a warlord named Mohammed Adid. Anybody that's listening, and I say this sort of sheepishly, if you've read the book Black Hawk Down or seen the movie Black Hawk Down, that details and dramatizes the event of which I was a participant. And that sort of my first experience in battle, the baptism by fire, not to be so cliche, was a big one. And that, which I'm sure we can talk about in a little bit, actually propelled me to stay in the military, stay in the Army, and commit, you know, 20 years to the gun club in service to our nation to protect those who protect our country. And during my 20-year career, I had the Somalia deployment. I taught ROTC at Johns Hopkins for a couple of years. I worked at the Army War College at the strategic level and then finished up my career with the 10th Mountain Division up in northern New York at Fort Drum and spent 15 months in Iraq during the surge from 2006 to 2007 and then probably retired and you know, started the whole new life. And gosh, hard to believe that was 10 years ago.
Well, and I appreciate you telling the story. I know that you're a very humble person and you're going, well, these people are going to be bored, but I'm sure that any firefighters or first responders who are listening and heard you say Ranger, Mogadishu, Black Hawk Down, they hear enough of those things and go, okay, this is somebody I really want to listen to. So, you know, you and I've talked a little bit and, our common friend Pat and Don and some of those guys who do so much with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue have recommended you highly. And I know the people who've heard you speak to us at Palm Beach County Fire Rescue have been very appreciative of you. So I first of all, I want to thank you for your service. As a son of a military guy, my dad's been in the Air Force and retired a few years back. You know, it means a lot to me to speak to the people who take the time to protect us. And people talk about firefighters protecting us, and I know we don't do near what the military does, and so we appreciate your service. And I had the privilege of growing up with a father who I always describe as a great man, but a patriot, who in the reserves got the phone call in 2008. He was going over to Iraq during that surge you were talking about, and I remember saying, okay, Dad, you don't have to go. And he just looked at me and goes, my turn. You know, I haven't been in combat. I've been in reserves. It's my turn to go. I'm like, you're 58. You're good. He's like, nope, my turn to go. So I've been raised that way. And so I appreciate what you've done. And I want to thank you very much for your service. It's easy to read a book and watch a movie and go, oh, okay. And think you get it. But to imagine you being there and being on the ground and experiencing that was way different. So thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. And I mean that sincerely when I say that, that, you know, thank yous go a long way. As you know, in your profession, in the chosen profession that you have, which is protecting and serving us just the same here, you know, it's a big deal. Interestingly enough, my wife and I have a podcast that we do each week. And we, this morning, were fortunate to have Lara Logan, who is a CBS News correspondent. She's on 60 Minutes. Probably spent more time on the battlefield than every soldier I know combined. I mean, incredible. But she said something this morning that I was really, really amazing, very dramatic, and punctuated what you just said. She said, you know, we all have opinions about policies, and we have thoughts and grand ideas about how things should be and would be and what we should do. And, you know, she was talking at the strategic level, and she brought it all home. She said, you know, you, no matter what you think, you don't know until you actually witness it, whatever fill in the blank mm-hmm. it is. You know, I would say to you, and rushing into a burning building, or, you know, dealing mm-hmm. with the trauma of things, or on the battlefield. So, you know, it was really quite remarkable, for lack of a better word, to hear her say that. And she said it was such conviction, you know, that we mm-hmm. do hear it. And sometimes we all nod our head like, yeah, that's dangerous, but okay, someone else does it. But, you know, when you first, you know, and I can only imagine what it was like, what it's like in your profession, you know, it's a game-changing, eye-opening, just exclamation point on why when you witness something that traumatic and decide to go back for more, I think that is very telling about the character. Much like you talked about your dad, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Well, you just brought up a great point. I think I was going to get there a little later, but I think it's good to go ahead and just jump into it now if it's okay. Mm-hmm. You talked about trauma, and I think, you know, the reporter you talked about hit around the head. Everybody has their idea of what trauma is, and we talk all the time in the fire service about one of the struggles for the military person, the police officer, the firefighter, is they experience trauma, legitimate trauma, vicarious trauma, secondary trauma, and then they go home and their spouse or their kid is complaining about the internet being down, or the water heater not working, or the cable being out, or something that to them is traumatic. And the problem is a lot of firefighters have a hard time because their trauma level is so high in comparison to that they just look at that person and go, I can't even communicate with you. We're going to get into that a little bit here in a moment, but what I want to talk to you about was, if you're okay with it, just tell us what some of the,
sure.
You don't have to get into specifics, obviously, but just tell us what some of those traumatic events you faced and how they carried over into kind of what you're doing now. Because I know, you know, typical firefighter, I say to them, hey, name your top 10, name your worst 10. And I don't ever make them do it because it's not probably healthy, but, you know, we can kind of all jump out and say, here's the top 10 calls that were the worst 10, whatever they were, and here's how they affected me, because we all just kind of know. And I know the military, you guys have a lot of those same things where these are the things that happened that really stuck with me. So just kind of tell us about how trauma played a part in your life and how it kind of shaped you to where you are now.
Sure. No, and that's, boy, that is the, you know, the $64,000 question on, you know, in the really ethereal world, how you deal with, you know, what's the worst of the worst. And I've also found, and I promise I'll answer your question in a second, you know, that is that the discussion that we only seem to want to have with those that we know have shared a similar experience. You know, how we talk to our teammates,
yeah.
our
mm-hmm.
peers, we're very open and very matter of fact about, you know, even the worst of the worst. And yet, like you said, you know, coming home and explaining to some very well, you know, and let's just take spouses and family away from it, but, you know, our really good friends that, you know, we don't spend our sleeping moments with, you know, you just find yourself, I don't really want to try and even explain to you because you'll never get it. You know, then that becomes frustrating. And so, but back to your question, though, I would tell you, you know, in a really big view, I'll start, you know, you join the Army, and I joined in peacetime, even though it was the Cold War. And every day is spent, as I'm sure it is with the fire service, you know, preparing to get better, to do my job better, preparing for the day that call comes. So that's marksmanship training, that's physical fitness, that's a small unit drill, and first aid. You know, and first aid is a big one because we gotta take care of our own on the battlefield. And, you know, we've come a long way, remarkably, in all the moulage kind of, you know, kits and this, that, and the other, trying to make it to replicate the battlefield. And I found that, for me, you could be really proficient at, you know, what they used to call the ABCs, you know, airway, stop the bleeding, and, you know, circulation, and treat for shock, and have that down cold. And the first time you witness a real live person, particularly somebody that you know and love, one of your teammates, one of your squad mates, one of your soldiers, you know, in distress, boy, that just leaves a big image. Just, and I'm just talking about a broken limb, a severe bleeding, something like that, you know, that maybe not life-threatening, but that has such an impact on you. And then that graduates up, of course, on the battlefield. You see somebody shot. And, you know, a gunshot wound in real life, in my experience, was nothing like what I had seen on TV. And let's face it, we all get shaped by, you know, the media, good or bad or indifferent. It's a discussion for later.
Right.
But, you know, we do have that, wow, this is somebody, right, literally, that I'm touching that has his or her, you know, blood, type A, type B, whatever, spilling out of them. And I've got to do something to stop that. I mean, thankfully, training, of course, at a high standard and a high level of proficiency does kick in. But the aftermath of that is, you know, I don't want to say traumatic because that has a lot of different thoughts in this day and age, I think. But, you know, that leaves an impression. And then just graduate up the whole level of distress from, you know, a loss of a limb or a loss of a, you know, severe amount of blood to the point where somebody's in shock, that somebody's in such severe distress that, you know, you're in a position where you can't render any more aid. You know, that has an effect.
Right.
And then ultimately, of course, to see somebody that's been killed on the battlefield, certainly friendly, but absolutely even enemy. You know, those are images that you can't erase. And we could have a million cliches, you know, you can't unring the bell, you can't unsee it. All of those are things that I'm sure it's exactly the same in the fire service world, that, you know, you being that operator at that moment, you live with forever. And that you always, I think I found that, you know, there's that cycle of replaying in your mind. Did I do everything I was supposed to do? Did I do everything I could do? And was it just at that point where there was nothing more I could do? And it was unfortunately just the way things were going to be because of the severity of the wound, for instance, that, you know, I couldn't do anymore, and I've got to be able to be better with it.
Right.
And then you multiply that.
Right, and I think you guys, one of the things we talk about the military and the fire is, military, you guys get so inundated for such a brief period of time. I mean, it's that 6-month, 9-month, 1-year deployment, and it's not a super long time. I mean, I say that. You're away from home. It's a long time. But it's that focused period of time where it's a potential for severe death and destruction. I know we have a couple of guys in my department who've come and kind of vented with me a little bit and have shared more than I ever anticipated they would share with me. And I'm just going, wow, you did that in 6 months. And I mean, just a brief synopsis is enough for me to get a little overwhelmed. The difference in the fire department is we don't see those things over that short period of time. Our difference is they're more spread out, but they do come over that 25 or 30 year period. And I don't think that, and this isn't like a love fest here, but I don't think what we see is even near what you guys do unless you happen to be in that wrong station, wrong time, wrong place. You guys are obviously, especially in the position you're at as a ranger and going to places like Mogadishu and then that Black Hawk Down story you've told, you know, those are you guys are the ones who are seeing a lot more than that. So how has that translated? Because the reality is, a first responder who's listening to this show right now is going, yeah, I get it. I get it, and I'm sitting here listening to your story going, I don't know exactly what he's talking about, but I get it. I understand it enough. And then the question is, for the person who's listening to you that just doesn't get it at all and watches Chicago Fire or Rescue Me or some other, you know, or some military show and goes, oh, yeah, I got it. You know, I get that that person is probably never going to get it. And if that's you listening out there, I apologize to you. We're not making fun of you. I need to make sure I say that. But, you know, that person is not going to get it on that same basis as you talked about before. But to the individual, the first responder who kind of gets what you're saying, where did that lead you in your – and the truth is you and I have never talked about this, so I'm just asking you, and if you don't want to share it on the air, you don't have to. But,
no,
but where did that lead you as you walked through that trauma and as you walked through that – where did that lead you? What did that do to you as a family member, as a spouse, as a friend, as an employee, as a whatever? What did that do to you, and how did you work through that?
Yeah, well, that's, again, a fantastic question. And I will start big and go small. You know, what me, Matt Evertzman, sort of summarized from it all is that, you know, after we, it's what happens next. It's the after the fact kind of review. And, you know, what I took away from my career, starting in Mogadishu and then the rest of my career through Iraq, was, you know, faith, family, and friends. You know, how do we go through, you know, and I don't want to sound so Dr. Phil-ish that I know, but, you know, how do we process, grieve, and digest and then move on without forgetting, but health in a healthy way, continue to live our lives and be productive and to contribute back to the unit and back to this. And one thing that I throw out just in general, and I promise I'll get to the back half of the question about where that got me to today. When you're in the military, whether it's in the Ranger Regiment or the 10th Mountain Division, or it doesn't even matter if you're an infantryman. I mean, if you're serving, you know, this nation, you are supporting the national mission. That's what you do, you know. And so you realize that everything I do every day is in support of the greater good. It's in support of the service and protection of our nation. And that's sort of this that you can always go back to, you know what, whether I did it right or did it wrong or did it a little bit right or a little bit wrong, I can still correct it and I can drive on and move forward because I know I'm still contributing and I'm supporting that greater good. And I hate to keep sounding cliche about that, but, you know, that was a really big deal. And for me, for instance, after Mogadishu, I was young, single, 26-year-old, scary as it was, and with all the horrors of war, what I realized was that was such a significant event that I still had more to give. And I could take my lessons learned and give back to the next generation of Rangers and soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines that were coming up. So to me, I thought, and I know that sounds really self-aggrandizing, and I don't mean it to be like this was just Matt Evertzman, the hero, as much as a lot of guys realize, you know, it's our job, and it's the bad stuff of our job to witness. But this mission needs to be driven by people that are continually committed to it. But that I understood early on. Believe it or not, we had a psychologist with us when we were in Mogadishu. And at first, we all sort of chuckled, like, why would you have a psychologist with you on the battlefield? And, of course, you realize that, you know, there's a reason that someone is there, someone that has expertise in dealing with, you know, the human mind and emotions and how we process this. And believe it or not, you know, while we were still in country, within a day or so of that battle, you know, to talk to the psychologist just for, you know, 15 minutes had such a dramatic change in the way I was able to grieve. and process, you know, the death of, you know, some of my teammates and, or I shouldn't say some, of all of my teammates, and, you know, kind of refocus and figure out what we need to do. And, oh, by the way, we're still in a war zone, so you really have to. That preservation of the force and protection of the force, you know, is a big, big, big deal. As you can imagine, you come back to, you know, stateside, and you're back to sort of your normal life, whatever normal is, and you realize, man, it's a whole different world than it was when I left, you know, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, a year ago. I mean, it's a whole different world, and I have to get used to it. It's funny, I just thought of this, that one of the things they said before we redeployed home after Mogadishu, the commander, one of the Delta Force guys said, hey, listen, you know, your wife has been home raising your children, taking care of the house, paying the bills, keeping everything ship shape and just driving on. And, oh, by the way, she doesn't have real-time access to you, so she has really no idea. Her fear factor is through the roof. And you know what? If she painted the house purple yesterday because it made her feel good, and you get home, your first words out of your mouth, and this is from the commander, is, honey, I love that color. This is awesome. But that's your first response to anything when you get back, is that your spouse has been putting up with this and dealing with it on her own, and it's a whole different kettle of fish. She's not dealing with somebody getting shot at, but she is dealing with trying to make it through every day, hoping that the chaplain's car isn't in the driveway at 0:30 tomorrow morning. And you, the soldier, need to be aware of that. And we'll figure out the communication later, but just program yourself right now. The first thing you say is, honey, I love the purple room. And I've always remembered it, and I hadn't thought of it in years, but it really was pretty doggone profound.
That is hugely profound. And I think that can apply over to our firefighters and police officers, first responders, who, you know, even if you're gone for 12 hours, 24 hours, a 48-hour shift, even though that feeling is, oh, well, what I dealt with was, you know, scraping the 3-year-old off the ground who wasn't properly seatbelted in by the parents and was ejected in the rollover, and I had to scrape him off the ground. And we come home and compare it to that seemingly menial thing, or we go, oh, you painted the room, you know, you said painted the room purple, that's a great illustration. I think we sometimes forget the fact that everybody is dealing with their own stuff. We talk about all the time with our new recruits of, you're running a 911 call because somebody thought it was important enough to call you. And they felt significant trauma or situation or emergency enough to go, I need to call 911 for this. Now, our response is not to get there and evaluate, well, how serious was this? The process and what we're required to do and the responsibility is to go, let me meet your need. Let me help you right now. And because I don't know what you're going through. And we have people all the time who are, we have firefighters who, I talk about it this way. I say, we eat our own. I'm sure the military is the same thing where, you know, we go, well, what's wrong with you? I just saw the same thing as you. Well, you don't know that guy's going through a divorce. That lady's going through the loss of a loved one. That, you know, that person is going through this, or this, and you don't know it. And sometimes you forget about what they deal with. So I think that's a really profound story and an analogy, a metaphor that officer used with you.
It really was, and it's funny. And just so everybody knows, I'm 52 years old now, and I feel like I'm 16 at sometimes because I'm an idiot. But you know, I'm still learning in this new world. But you know, you do get to this point where you realize you don't. We all make very we all do. Soldiers, firemen, EMTs, doctors, whatever. Like, how on earth could somebody let this happen? And the truth is that while there are some obvious, you know, there's some obvious things we look at and say, wow, that person's an idiot. I can't believe they were so unsafe or they did something so egregious and look what happened. This is horrible. There are also that point where I think when we're looking at it just in a, you know, the humanity of it all sometimes, and again, not to be so philosophical that, you know, somebody is going through, you know, the divorce or somebody's going through financial crisis or in such distress that they're just not thinking right. And, you know, to bring it back to the military, we always say, you know, the enemy has a vote. The enemy has a vote. The best trained, best equipped, most technologically advanced force on this planet, you know, that's in the best planned mission. Everything is perfect. And, you know, some 15-year-old Somali, for instance, just happens to be walking, you know, down the street with a grenade in his hand and just for whatever reason decides to throw it over the wall. And, oh, by the way, it just happened to be good guys on the other side of that wall, and a grenade goes off and the best trained soldiers are killed. You know, I mean, it couldn't be prevented, couldn't be seen. It just sometimes the enemy has that vote. And when you're the responder, you know, you're not thinking, gosh, how did that 15-year-old get into the wire and do this? You're like, I got to take care of my mates. You know, I got to step it up right now, right here, this moment. I've got to save lives. I've got to, you know, do all that. And, you know, it's hard. And it's after the fact, of course, where there's a lot of armchair quarterbacking, and a lot of it is for the right reason. But we think, you know, this just might not have been able to be prevented. You know, it's a reason they call it an accident. It's life, I guess. I don't know. If you, and I don't mean to, again, go off out of my sandbox, but, you know, there's things that you just have no control over. You just don't. And for those of us, like you all, that are in this, you know, a noble service that protects our lives and our livelihoods, you know, always got to remember, you know, it's for that the mission, our greater mission, that we are here every day. We go to work and put on our kit and roll out on a moment's notice because, you know, not that I say like, hey, because we signed up for it, but we really did sign up for it, and we believe collectively that that's our role here. It's a challenge, and if I were won the Powerball one day, maybe I could go back to school and learn why that is. But you know, in my little caveman logic, all I can say is it's you know, we believe in that bigger mission.
Well, you brought up another point earlier, and I think. If there's somebody listening out there who, and there's, like, by the way, there's, I think I have three listeners that could listen to this besides my mom. So there's not a lot of people listening right now.
My mom and dad are listening too. So hi, mom, hi, dad. So we got five.
Okay, perfect. All right. So what we typically get is a lot of archives from people who listen later. And so there may be some individuals who happen upon this who are not first responders. And I think those individuals hear probably, and I'm just guessing, but they hear your story about Mogadishu, about Somalia, about what took place there. And they hear you say, dealing with the loss of these men and women, the people I fought with. And then they hear you say, what is the purpose for going back? And so they get, and I think a lot of people stop that aren't in our world and go, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean go back? like that's the end, right? I mean, you lost the men you fought with. So you're done. And I'd like for you to address that real quickly, just kind of how you get to the point where you go, well, there's this purpose, there's this reason why I'm doing this. And yes, we lost something, and we lost some people. We lost some of our mission. We lost some of the people who were with us. We lost those who were closest to us. But there's a reason why we go back. And so if you don't mind addressing that real quick, just for the person who's out there going, whoa, I'm not following that.
Yeah, no, that's a legitimate question that parents, spouses, friends, and even people that aren't connected with any of us that are in that situation would ask. And what I go back to is, and it becomes really punctuated in the military when you're in the crucible. You know, I mean, there's no way to have this conversation without giving cliches, so I apologize, but you know, when you're at the final exam, you know, and you pass, fail, or you get a C, and you realize this is not a job. You know, this isn't a finite job that I do once and then I'm done. You know, first of all, it's a commitment. I signed up for, you know, a period of time, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. And during that time, it actually becomes my career. And my career is to deal with these events, and listen, sometimes they're exhilarating and everything goes well and we all high-five each other afterwards and are like, hey, you know, it's just another cool day and it was a great adventure. And when you get punched in the face, because bad luck, bad circumstances, bad timing, who knows, and things don't go well, you realize if you are committed to this profession at arms that you are, you know, I don't want to say required, but you really are by obligated to continue on. And for some people, they're like, well, I'm just going to write out my enlistment and then I'm done. I've seen it, I've done it, and I'm out. And where other people are like, you know, I've seen it, I've done it, that sucked, that particular mission or whatever, but I want to continue to serve and go back. And listen, you know, if you're in a war zone, you know, which are not measured by, you know, hours or days, but it's by completing the mission, you have to collectively, you know, lace it up, lace up those boots tighter and go back. And I don't know, you know, I really don't know why that is. And I don't know how it is, other than in my experience, it's always been that, again, the collective in aggregate, the collective mass of the unit, there were, it always seemed culturally to be that, well, that's what we do. And it wasn't out of bravado, and it wasn't because I'm so cool and I'm so brave and, you know, I'm flamboyant Ranger, Delta, SEAL, blah, blah, blah. It's because we are committed. And I know that sounds a little hollow 20-something years after Mogadishu in the safety of my office in West Palm Beach to say, oh, yeah, you know, of course I went back. But we all went back. You know, we went back because that was the culture. That was this intrinsic feeling that you have being a part of that kind of a unit to do these unbelievable missions that, and truly in Mogadishu, that no other unit in the world was willing to do. Every other country in the United Nations Security Council, the big players, every single country said no to do that mission except for the United States. You know, and there was mass genocide going on. They were looking at, you know, 500,000 people were going to be killed in Mogadishu alone in 1992, and that number would double in 1993. They projected that over 1 million people would die from genocide and starvation and civil war if somebody didn't take action. That, I got to tell you, is something pretty easy to get behind. You know, that understanding, and yeah, it's really miserable when one of your own gets hurt or wounded or killed. But that idea, it's not that that life certainly doesn't matter. There's nothing that can, there's no argument you can make about the loss of one life. It's just impossible. Anybody that thinks you can is wrong. They'd never have to talk to the widow or the parents about their son or daughter, you know, being killed on the battlefield. There's nothing you can do to make them, you know, say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I got it. You know, even the most stoic of us would be, at the end, we've lost our flesh and blood. But with our soldiers and sailors, airmen, marine, and I'm sure our fire service guys, you know, with the right culture, I think propels us to say, yeah, I'm going to go back in. I'll do it better next time. I'm going to share those lessons, and we can fix this, and we can do better. And you know what? The next time, it still might suck, and it still might be bad, and it still might have a bad outcome. But, you know, that, if not me, who? You know, if I don't do that, who will? Mm-hmm. Who's going to say, send me? That's we have to have that. And I think by and large, and I call it the noble professions, again, you know, the people that keep us safe at home, the people that protect our faith, you know, our clergy, the people that, you know, protect our minds, our educators, and then the people that protect our country, our soldiers. Those are all professions that we rely on to give it everything they got every day, and bloody and bruised and beaten up, pick it up again and do it again tomorrow. And that has to happen. Yeah, it just has to. We will fail, we will fall, we will fracture if we don't, as leaders, continually promote that. And again, this isn't being Caesar. This is being pragmatic and understanding. Again, I go back to that, to the national mission. That's what you have to do. And absolutely. And now, as a 52-year-old civilian, I don't have to go back into the furnace. You know, I don't have to go back to the fire unless I somehow chose a profession to do that. And I must admit, I'm I miss it at times, but I'm glad that I don't. I'm glad that I, you know, am home every night with my wife and daughter and dogs and cats and, mm-hmm. you know, living a new, really vanilla, boring life.
Well, and I think that we could do a whole 2 or 3 hour broadcast on just how to make that transition into that life. And one of the things I work with on the chaplain side of things is trying to help our retirees move into retirement the right way. And I have that conversation about that purpose. But I think one of the things you hit on is the fact that the purpose is really what makes us different. People say to me a lot, well, and not just me, but just in general, firefighters, police officers, military, well, you guys are heroes. And I know you probably feel the same way. You just kind of laugh because you just kind of chuckle and go, I'm nobody's hero. I'm the dad to my daughter, and I'm the son to my parents, and I'm the brother to my brother. And you know, I'm a person. I'm an individual who happens to do my job. I think what happens, ironically, is we end up really respecting each other a lot more. Like firefighters look at cops and go, "What is wrong with you? Why in the world would you carry a gun and have people upset with you and wanting to hurt you?" And I look at military people and I go, "Why would you want to go over somewhere where you can't even lift your head up to salute anybody because you're trying to see the rocks you're walking on and knowing that you could be shot at any time?" And then you individuals look at us as firefighters and say some of the same things about going into a burning building, and I just chuckle because I think all of us have that personality that fits one of those molds. But regardless of the mold, it's about the purpose. It's about Rick Warren from Saddleback he's a pastor out in Saddleback in California.
Yep.
Talks about the purpose-driven life. And I remember reading that book years and years ago. It was a bestseller for a while. And I remember thinking, purpose-driven life. Okay, well, I get that. Well, I think for first responders, it's like, yeah, purpose-driven life. It's what we do. But a lot of people don't really understand that. Well, what's my purpose? Well, I'm a clerk, or I'm an accountant, or I'm a whatever. And they think that the purpose is – they have to find a purpose. Well, I try to remind our firefighters – I don't know how you feel about this, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. I tell them, I said, your purpose is not firefighting. You are not a firefighter who happens to be a human. You are a human who happens to be a firefighter, and your purpose needs to be greater than that. Your purpose and your identity cannot be firefighting. And so I don't know if you guys ran into that in the military. I'm assuming you probably did based on the culture of the personalities we all face. Did you guys see that as well?
Well, you know, that again, man, we are like, you know, Siamese twins here. Yes, the short answer is yes. We talk about it in the military, and I think after 17 years, you know, in the post 9/11 world, the military has gotten better about appreciating the human side of the story. The but comma is, you know, we still have a job to do, you know, and the job is support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, that's your job description. You know, you have to do that. And along the way, you, that individual soldier, regardless of rank, has to be able to, you know, we got to heap more stuff into your emotional backpack and say, oh, by the way, you've got to be sympathetic to your spouse, to your children, to your parents, to your friends, to your brothers, sisters, and everybody. But, oh, by the way, don't forget, at some point we are going to give you the call and you're going to have to get on the bus to go to the airfield and say goodbye. And you're going to have to focus on the really immediate present about where you're deploying to and what's going to happen, because there's a lot of bad people out there to do it. Having been said, that same idea when you start the transition, you know, when that mission is done, literally and figuratively, and now we're going to start the new life, you know, that is, like, and I would imagine, again, it's the same with firefighters and, you know, first responders and everybody in the fire service world, you know, finding that new purpose, that new mission, you know, is a challenge. And in the military, you know, let's just use one enlistment. Let's take a 4-year enlistment, you know, a young kid from West Palm Beach and graduates from fill-in-the-blank high school, enlists the next day, goes off, goes to the 82nd Airborne, deploys to Kandahar or Kabul or Baghdad, spends a year somewhere during that enlistment, sees what's what and who's who, and then he gets out or she gets out, and they've witnessed all this stuff that is a far cry from, you know, going over to the beach on Palm Beach to see what the rich people are doing. And now they're back and they've had such an experience and they're out and we've spent every moment of every day training and perfecting their craft for 3 years and 9 months and 3 weeks. And then the military gives them 3 weeks to plan their transition. You know, you get 3 weeks now to figure out the rest of your life. And, you know, a lot of people get really angry and mad, and they're like, oh, you know, the government should be doing more, and they should be, well, the government's got to fight a war, and they've got to support the war, and they're doing the best they can. And I mean that sincerely. You know, how then can we help those young men and women, for instance, from the military, successfully make that transition once they're literally out of the reach of Uncle Sam, and now they're back in West Palm Beach trying to figure it out and trying to find that new mission. And again, I would think, you know, if you're that guy or gal that's been on the job, you know, for however many years that the, you know, station 19 or fill in the blank, and now you don't have to keep your phone by your bed, and now you don't have to listen to your radio, and now you're, you know, that's hard, and you can't just undo all that overnight. I mean, that takes time. And oh, by the way, it doesn't just take time for you, the individual. There's got to be, and I'm going to say sympathetic, and I mean that more like I should say empathetic, employer that realizes that, you know, there's such great talent and this kind of a person did so well and has so much to offer my company. If I could adjust the norm a little bit to be a little more accommodating, I'm not saying that everybody gets a free pass by any means, but, you know, if we could be that right company that's like, gosh, that guy or gal with that kind of stamina, with that kind of an ethic, with that kind of wherewithal, let alone their technical and tactical ability, they could do a lot in this company, you know, that would let them go home every night to the white picket fence and the wife and the dog and children and husband, dog, children, whatever, and make that transition easy. And I think that's where we fail. And I don't say fail. I don't blame anybody. It's just it's hard to educate our community, literally, if you're not the husband, wife, you know, parent, brother, sister of a firefighter, for instance, or a soldier. It's really hard for you to say, yeah, we'll do a good job. We'd really like to hire some firefighters. We'd really like to hire some soldiers because it's a nice thing to do. But they really don't know how to do that because no one's told them. So it's got to be, and I dare say that village, but it really does take a lot of us at the local level to help bring these young men and women from all these professions back into you know, our communities, so they can continue to serve in a new, in, you know, their new calling. I know that sounds awfully deep for a Wednesday and a Thursday night radio show, and I didn't mean to get too deep on it. No. But it's a fantastic discussion.
No, that's exactly the case, and I sit with the new recruits once a week for about a half an hour a week and talk to them about behavioral health and emotional wellness and professional development and kind of help them with a career path. And one of the first questions I ask them, and it's either the first week or second week typically, is, what are your plans for retirement? And it's hysterical because they look up at you with these eyes that go, are you kidding me? I'm trying to get through the next 12 weeks to pass this job, and then I'm going to try to get through the next 40 after that to get through my probationary year, and then we'll see what happens. And I have the conversation with them. I say, you've got to start talking now and planning now for what you want to do after this job, because it can't just be about this job and this career. It's got to be more than that. And I think the idea is you hit around the head, is to get the well-rounded whole person to have the ability to learn what they have. And I guess that leads me to my next question is, so what is it you're doing now? What, you know, you said you've been out for about 10 years, you said. So what are you doing now with your life as a retiree, you know, the guy who used to be the ranger, used to be the hero, used to be this, you know, I know you still are, and I'm sure that if anybody questions you, you can prove to them you still are. But because if anybody ever tells me I used to be a firefighter at some point, I'm gonna knock them in the head. But you know, what is it you're doing now with your life, and, you know, besides your wife and your kids and your dogs, you know, what else is happening?
Yeah, so, you know, 10 years retired, and I, you know, when I say that, I always cringe a little bit because I look at the people on Palm Beach that are retired. I'm like, that's a whole different retirement than I have, you know.
I live down here. That's very, very different. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, deciding what color Bentley you're going to buy next month is a little different than what the Eversman retirement plan, you know, is like. And God love them. I just couldn't help it. But, you know, the new journey has been really interesting for my wife and me. You've gone through a couple of different jobs, and I don't want to brag, but, you know, I slid into some solid employment, and they were very fruitful economically. You know, I was making good money, more than I made. You know, you leave one job and you come to the next and they pay you more. You're like, wow, as an enlisted, you know, infantryman, this is pretty fantastic. You know, I'm making really good money by all accounts. And I was desperately unhappy. And so after a couple of years, I would, you know, you kind of get the itch and another job would, open up and you're like, hey, slide into that. And again, you know, the money was good, but I would be unhappy. And after a couple of iterations of this, my wife, God bless her for being, you know, just my wife for saying yes, you know, she said, Matt, this is silly. You know, all of these jobs that you've had, you really shouldn't have taken any of them. You know, we took them for the money, and we being the operative board, we took them for the money, but they were never a good fit for you. You were never really happy. You were, you know, comfortable, which adds, it takes a little bit of the pressure off, but you were never happy. And why is that? And interestingly enough, I lesson learned in the military, you know, I would always record my observations. You know, in the military, we call it the after action report. You know, of all the things that I'm learning, all the newness, all the woulda, shoulda, coulda, things that I liked, didn't like, and all that stuff. And in aggregate, you know, over 10 years, there were a lot of lessons learned the hard way. And what we came to the conclusion was, and I kind of spouted off on it a minute ago, was that, you know, the transition experience, and I'm just going to now just focus on soldiers because I don't know what it's like to be a fireman or an EMT or paramedic. But, you know, for a soldier, you know, the transition experience, the norm right now is pretty average. You know, there's just not a lot of support. And the support that's out there, I personally feel, is average at best. And it's average at best because we throw a lot of cookie cutter ideas at a transitioning serviceman or woman and say, hey, change your resume. You know, get all the military out of your resume and do this. And go online and you can translate your skills to be this. And on and on. So we help this person almost in a charade, you know, change their resume and make a due presentation of who they are based off of who they were when they were on active duty. And we like, let's stick you into a job where that resume matches, which, you know, that calculus sounds good. However, we've never stopped to think about, you know, does that man or woman, has he or she found their new purpose? You know, whether it's going to Wall Street or going to the junkyard or being an entrepreneur, it doesn't matter, but have they really thought and truly explored what their new mission, new purpose is? And if they have, I'm going to tell you that 9 times out of 10, the procedures we put them through in transition have been wrong. And, oh, by the way, we've also found that employers that need good men and women to come serve, and I'm just going to, in a broad sense, say, you know, designated hitters, you know, the people who can step in to do the job for me that might not even have a legitimate description, but, you know, the boss that says, gosh, if I just had a really good guy or gal, I could come in and organize this and manage that and just do it, and I could tell them everything about the industry, but I just really need a good person. We haven't been looking for that drop zone. And I think finding that drop zone as a euphemism for the new employer and giving them some guidance on, hey, listen, if you're willing to make a few minimal changes in your recruiting effort and in your onboarding effort and in your reception integration effort, I, Matt Eversman and Tori Eversman at Eversman Advisory have an idea how we can find some really top-of-the-line talent that could come in and fit the bill for you. And not only are they going to be a good fit and they're going to stay – they're going to raise the waterline for your company. You know, they're going to bring a work ethic and an ethos and an esprit de corps and a sense of professionalism to your enterprise that you might not normally have gotten. And I'm not saying that it's better. I'm just telling you it's a little different. But I'm also saying this kind of quality person, the center mass group, if you're willing to, you, employer, are willing to make a little bit of adjustment, we can get you some really good people that are looking for you, and they just didn't know you even existed because we, back to our original comment, you know, we're shaped by the media. You know, for instance,
right.
Who would tell some kid that's sitting in Kandahar, for instance, hey, when you get out in 6 months, 8 months, a year, would you consider to work for, you know, the Acme Rocket Skate Company in West Palm Beach? And of course, you're like, hell no, I'm not going to do that because I want to go, you know, I want to go work for SpaceX because that's, you know, that's what I want to do. And you're like,
right.
Okay, it's hard to compete against the social, you know, the personas that we see socially. But if, again, the call it the somebody with the dog whistle could say, hey, by the way, though, I know SpaceX sounds really sexy, and maybe it is. I don't mean to knock on that. I use it as an example. This person may be like, hey, you know, Matt Evertsman, veteran, Black Hawk Down, Iraq guy, he's saying that the Acme Rocket Skate Company might be good for me because he's vetted it and he's helped them. And, you know, all of a sudden you start figuring, wow, dollar for dollar, I could actually have the same lifestyle. And this is a good company that's got a good program. And, you know, that ultimately is where we go. So our idea is that if we could help businesses figure out a better veteran hiring initiative and then be willing to, and again, this isn't like teaching a new religion. This is just, we could tweak it to make it a little more legitimately veteran, you know, veteran friendly just for this particular pipeline. You know, that might help it. And again, in our minds, then if you're a company recruiter, you could take that model and apply it to, you know, your college graduate, wherever you're using a pipeline to get people, firemen, for instance, whatever it is, that's that. So it's part education, part charm school, part basic training for the new world. But at the end, you know, oh, and by the way, if I can put this talent through a curriculum, you know, 6-8, 10-hour curriculum of taking the surprises out of the new world, they're going to be happier sooner and they're going to stay longer. And we think that's a good deal. So that's what my wife and I are doing down here. And hopefully we can do it just in Palm Beach County. I mean, it'd be great to never get on an airplane again unless I was going on vacation.
Well, I think you really kind of wrapped up that whole concept, which is, it's helping people find their purpose. And I don't know if the listeners out there have listened, I don't know if you have either, to Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. But that book really talks about that connecting piece, which it sounds like what you guys are really doing. It's connecting the people to other opportunities. And, we could sit and talk about just that part for a long time, and I'm sure you'd be fine with me giving you an advertisement for your company. But the reality is, it doesn't matter what it is. What matters is that you have a purpose. And I think you've shown that, you know, what are if somebody had told you 30 years ago when you were going to the military, here's what you'd be doing, you probably would have laughed at them. I'm guessing. I don't know
you
that well, but
completely.
Yeah. And I've said to people before, you know, I went to seminary. I got out of high school, went to seminary because I was going to be a pastor to teenagers and young adults. And had you said to me, oh, yeah, firefighter, that's where you're going to be, and I would have been, okay. And then if you had said EMS, you know, portion of a firefighter, which I'm an EMS captain right now, I would have laughed even harder because I was like, wait, that involves needles and medicine? No, I don't like science. And to look back and go, okay, well, now I'm 25 years post that moment when I was making those decisions. Now you go, wait. Oh, wow, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I'm a person of faith that talks from the chaplain's perspective of where I believe God wants people to be. And I think that what the idea here is to talk about purpose. And and maybe that's how we kind of wrap this up, is just to talk about how firefighters can find that purpose. Because I know within the military, you guys probably have some similar situations where you get assigned to a certain task or a certain role that becomes your specialty. And I know there's special schools for those things. And there's certain things you have control over and certain things you don't. And just the same thing in the fire department. You're going to come in and you're going to be a firefighter, for most places, a firefighter EMT, maybe a firefighter first responder, but you're going to learn the basics of fire and you're going to learn the basics of EMS. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the state of Washington, state of Florida, New Jersey, California, wherever you're at. That's basically what you're going to do. And what I found is that a lot of people go, okay, well, I did that. Okay, next 25 years, 30 years, here we go, I'm done. And I've been really trying to encourage our firefighters to go, okay, what's my next thing? And it doesn't mean that you always have to be doing something and find the next promotion, and et cetera. Like I tell people, hey, there's people who are made to be a firefighter EMT on an ambulance or a rescue truck, whatever you call it, wherever you're at, and you're made to run that call and you love it and you do it. And there's other people who are made to be that driver engineer, driver operator, and they're going to pump the fire. And you have the people who are made to be the lieutenant, made to be the captain. And not everybody's made to be the chief of the fire department. And our department has 1,500 right. people. We have one chief. You know, there's one guy yep. who's cut out for that. And there's probably a handful of five or six more who could do the job really well right now. But the rest of us aren't. And we know that. And so it's finding your niche is kind of that word I use a lot. But I also call it finding your sweet spot. Finding it, where is it that you fit in that realm? Where is it you fit that allows you to be the most qualified and the most gifted to live out your best life, highest potential? And not some Tony Robbins, you know, hey, live your best life thing, but really going, hey, where do I fit? And I think that what that takes is real courage, because it takes you looking at yourself, being self-aware enough to go, okay, this is my strength, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, this is what it is. And it sounds to me like you guys have done that, where you said, okay, this is my passion, this is my new purpose with my wife, to be able to do this and connect these people. And I have a feeling, and you could address this maybe, but I have a feeling you probably feel very fulfilled. And you probably feel just as fulfilled as you did standing on a battlefield with a weapon over your shoulder, because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing right now. Does that sound about right?
It is. And you know, it's I say this with great, sheepishness. You know, it's, you know, as I hear you saying that, you're like, yeah, of course, that's how you do it. Like, that's exactly how it works. You know, you find your new purpose and off you go, and you'll be fulfilled, young man and young woman, and it's going to be good. But you kind of got to get, you got to go through the ringer a little bit. You know, you, this isn't something that just happens, I don't think, normally overnight. You know, thinking, it requires some deep, some prayerful thought. It requires a lot of discussion with your spouse, if you have one, or your faith, or your family, or your friends, to really think about. And I also think that you might be fooled a little bit at first, thinking, you know, because we've been so programmed that, hey, I got to keep the lights on, I got to pay the mortgage, I got to pay the bills, I need to have this for a quality of life. And those are all legitimate. I would not tell anybody, hey, you know, quit your job and go wander, because it'll all work out and everything's fine. Although I do know that it will all work out and it will all be fine if you're truly committed and you've given some heartfelt thought to what your new mission is. I only throw this one out,
right,
and not as a contradictory statement, but really as an add-on. For the veterans in transition, it's almost become the tagline, like, you know, follow your passion. Follow your passion. Follow your passion. Well,
yeah,
you know, we've got people who are passionate about hiking the Appalachian Trail, and that's that's a great thing to do, to be a good hiker. It is kind of hard, I would suggest, to provide for your family by being a professional Appalachian Trail walker. You know, as silly as that sounds, I think sometimes for young men and women, they can get a little swept into the passion part. So what I try
right.
and tell them is, you know, start with your purpose. Again, back to that whether we're using the Rick Warren example, which is, like, I think a wonderful one, you know, finding your purpose, what's your why, and however else people, you know, back into that idea of your greater good and your new mission. I had a great young man on our podcast a couple weeks ago from Baltimore who started this 24-hour lacrosse tournament to raise money for wounded soldiers. It's called Shootout for Soldiers. It's phenomenal. If you Google it, Shootout for Soldiers, anyone listening that's a lacrosse fan, I'm telling you, these guys are on it. It's amazing what they're doing. But we had Tyler Steinhardt, who's like I think he's 25 now. Started this when he was high school. And we were having a very similar conversation. And this young man said, you know, passion and purpose equals vocation. And I thought, wow, man, I wish I could just have said that myself. I really wish I had been smart enough to think that deep. But out of the mouth of the babes kind of thing.
Say that again.
Yeah, passion plus purpose equals vocation. And I thought that was just, he hit the cover right off the ball. I mean, that's it. It can't just be your passion. You've got to couple that with your new mission and your purpose. You put them together. Now, there's two parts of that story. You put that together, that's going to lead you to this new vocation. Anyway, there's probably smart people that can shoot holes in that theory, but again, in Eversman math, it makes really good sense.
That's good stuff. Well, I wanted you to make sure you did one thing here before we wrap up. I wanted to make sure that you plug your podcast, because I want to make sure you are able to talk about that, because I've had a chance to listen to it a little bit, and I know that it would be a beneficial thing to those of you who have heard this tonight and would like it, may have an opportunity to listen to that. So tell us about when it is, what you talk about.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so it's called The Veterans Nation. And wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's on iTunes or Spotify, I think those are the two big ones, you can just Google it on your search engine and it'll show up. It's Matt and Tori Eversman. And we just started it this spring. We've had, we had our 21st guest on the other day. And we try and get one out every week. And it's not just for veterans, although presumably it's to have discussions like we're having tonight about transition and dealing with transitions and, finding your new purpose and your new sense and your new why. And we've had great veterans on. We've had great civilians that were never veterans on. Like I said, we just interviewed Laura Logan today to talk about dealing with fear and that kind of stuff. And it's a good, easy hour to listen to. And again, it's called The Veterans Nation, and it's on iTunes and Spotify. And boy, we'd love for any of you all that are listening to tune in one day. We're definitely going to get some firefighters on there. You know, Patrick has been a great friend of ours. And, as we get to know each other more, Captain Hurd, we'd love to have you on. And, it's a mom and pop operation, so we can do about one show a week. And, getting me to edit it takes a little bit of time. But it's all good. And at the end of the day, though, it really does resonate with men and women, regardless of their age, and really regardless of their vocation, trying to, one, think about that new mission, and two, I think most importantly, in all honesty, not to sound so Oprah-like, but, this idea that, you're not the only one that's going through it, and I mean that with sincerity. We all tend, when we're jammed up or we're in a crisis or we're feeling distressed and we feel isolated, and to understand that you're not, and every single person walking on this planet, has been down there. And so listen to how they dealt with fear, anxiety, frustration, being told no, and no, whatever it is. That's really where what this has evolved into. And I don't want to call it inspirational, but I think it is, and it's certainly motivational and it's educational. So at the end of the day, regardless of your perfect life right now or your present life, this is just more stuff to contemplate over as you're thinking about the new chapter in life. And that's it. And we're all going to have a lot of new chapters for as long as we're blessed to be on this earth.
Yeah, love it. And I think, first of all, kudos to you for editing your own, because I got to be honest, I just get done with this and then just hand it over to I just hit end and then they take care of it. So I would never want to edit this stuff. that's why I only do it about once every 6 weeks, because they have me scheduled and they just go, here you go. And for right now, they're letting me still do it. But I appreciate you putting the time in, you and your wife doing that and getting the message out there. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I know we're going to be using you a lot at Palm Beach County Fire Rescue, because I believe your message is one that is powerful to those who are out there. And if you'd be willing to give your information out, whether it's a phone or email or link or website or whatever, for anybody who'd like to get a hold of you to bring you maybe to their fire department or their first responder agency, I'll give you a chance to do that right now.
Well, thank you so much. And it's very simple. It's our website is ebersmanadvisory.com. Echo Victor Echo Romeo Sierra Mike Alpha November November Advisory, all one word, .com. You can reach me on LinkedIn, Matt Eversman, or you can shoot me an email. I mean, I answer my own emails. So it's Matt, M-A-T-T, at EversmanAdvisory.com. And would love to hear from you and however we can help in your transition or just to chat. And I got to just say one more thing really quick before you kick me off of here and give me the hook. It was interesting today that your opening comments about the suicide prevention, and that's such a big deal. Not to be, you know, sound like I'm late to this dance. We had a great young man named Nick Black on our program. Nick started a not-for-profit called Stop Soldier Suicide, and you can go to stopsoldiersuicide.org. You know, with this epidemic. Actually, it's really a pandemic when we look at all of our allies and the soldiers that are going through it. And I would not presume to say to any of your listeners that, you know, hey, don't do what you're doing and go to the stopsoldiersuicide.org. But if you're feeling put upon, if you're feeling that it's just looking gloomy, all I can say is please, please, please. You know, talk to the chief, talk to your buddy, talk to your mate, find somebody. We need you. That's all I can say. We need you, and there is a greater good, and you've got a lot to offer. And I didn't mean to jump on top of your opening remarks, but it's just we got to stop it, and we got to understand that there's you have a lot to bring. You, the listener, you have a lot to contribute for an awfully long time.
Yeah, and just so people know, I mean, whether we're talking about, obviously military has the highest rate of suicide, and police and fire are quite a bit below that, but all first responders are dealing with this at a higher level, and it's why it's important that we get to understand it. So obviously we want to make sure people take the time to look into that and find out about it, and we want to offer that help wherever we can. And I want to thank Matt for being on the show tonight. I'm going to wrap up with a couple of things, and Matt, you're welcome to stay on and stay on here for a little bit, but I want to thank you so much for being here, and we're going to get you involved with a lot more stuff with us. So thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Captain. It was my pleasure. I will look to we'll continue this discussion offline, but just have a wonderful night. God bless you for all you're doing, and for all the you know, the firemen and first responders that are out there. Thank you for taking care of us, and God bless you. And hey, watch out for your mates, and keep your powder dry, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir.
Awesome.
Thanks, Matt.
Have a great night, and we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And that's Matt Eversman, and you heard his information on his website, on his group. Please take advantage of the opportunity you have to check him out, listen to him, learn from him. He's got so many great things to do, so many important items he can give you. And I just wanted to wrap up real briefly tonight with just a reminder. You know, life is short. We talk about that a lot. And we, as firefighters and first responders, we get that because we deal with death a lot. But I had the privilege last night of being a part of a funeral for a friend. My friend Alex is somebody that works with me. We got hired together. His wife, Lisa, it is her son. And the father of her son, Ed is a firefighter who retired from Boynton Beach, and Alex is a stepfather who works with us, and their son, Mitchell, passed away about 2 weeks ago, and I think 2 weeks ago today, actually. And he was in the Peace Corps. He was over in Namibia. He was living his life. And just as Matt was talking about, living his life, living out his purpose, being a part of what he believed he was supposed to be doing. And I just want to remind us that, you know, he was over there. He was out for a run and had a fatal condition and died. And 24 years old on his second day on his mission. And one of the things you'll see if you follow, for those who have followed Mitchell and those who are friends with him on social media and stuff, you see a person who just lived his life, lived his purpose. He believed he was exactly where he was supposed to be, doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing. Just a reminder to us as we sat in that service last night, and yes, it was a celebration of life, but it, as with any funeral and with any memorial service, it was sad. And we looked at a life well lived, a life that followed after the principles that his father and his mother and his stepfather, stepmother had given him and led him to believe and live after and follow after. So just a reminder of the fact that life is short. Take advantage of it. Love those who are closest to you. I know that yesterday, I think it was, I got a text from my daughter that said she had her graduation date for her college graduation for next April. And I smiled, but I also got a little choked up because I thought, wow, how are we already there? Life happens quickly. So take advantage of it. Enjoy those who are with you. I sat in that suicide prevention class today and just reflected on those we've lost. Talk to the people who are around you. And one of the principles that Mary talked about today was ask everybody how they're doing, but talk to the strong people. Ask the strong people how they're doing and see if there's somebody who you might think is strong who may need your help. It's what we're supposed to be doing as firefighters, and I thank Matt tonight for representing the military and what he brought to the table tonight. We just thank you guys for listening. If we can continue to love on the people who need us so badly and who just need us to care about them, we don't have to be experts. We don't have to be professionals. We simply need to ask. And I know when I ask, a lot of times I find out that there's a lot more than I can help with, so it's getting that person to the next level. It's getting them to the right counselor, the right clinician, the right EAP provider. Whoever it is, take advantage of the opportunity you have to make a difference. Find your purpose. Do something about it. Don't wait for somebody to give you a purpose. Figure out what it is. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. Be safe. Take care of your friends and your family and your brothers and sisters. We appreciate it. Bye.